Good morning. It is time to get up with Titletown USA. LA, the city of champions. But two huge controversies come out of last night. You need to hear it all. Man, Jerry is mad. You'll hear what he said. But the real question is, what should he do? We will answer that on the way. And all of a sudden, it seems that tanking for Trevor may be something that lasts a lot longer than you were expecting. Oh, we are packed today as we get up with you starting right now on a Wednesday from New York. Delighted you are here. Greeny and Graziano and the football crew is all ready to go, but there's only one place to begin. Game of the night, Game 6 of the World Series. Jessica Mendoza with me bright and early this morning as the Dodgers had a chance to clinch. What the Rays needed last night, Jess, was a quick start, and Randy Arozarena provided exactly that.
Greeny, how ridiculous has he been, by the way? I mean, his 10th home run, it was a slider off the plate by this much that he homers the opposite field. He has hit everything to get the Rays on the board.
And so the Rays get the lead, and then their pitcher is dealing. Blake Snell striking out the side in the first inning.
It's the best I've seen him look. And remember, he won the Cy Young in 2018. He had the fastball going, the slider going, the curveball. It was ridiculous, getting a ton of chase from the best offense in all of baseball.
Figure they won't touch him all night. Let's call that foreshadowing, because in the bottom of the sixth, still 1-0 Rays. Snell had allowed only one hit. Bear in mind, he hasn't pitched through the sixth since July of 2019. Nick Anderson warming in the pen. That's a base hit by Austin Barnes. And that, Jessica, despite only 73 pitches, was all she wrote for Blake Snell.
And this is crazy. You got to remember, Mookie Betts is on deck. He had struck out twice. I was calling this game going, don't do what the analytics say to bring him out. But the feel said he was dominant, and if Nick Anderson comes into this game, nobody was happier than Mookie Betts standing on deck saying thank you for taking Blake Snell out of this game, and he gets a double to get it rolling for the Dodgers.
Right off the bat, and wouldn't end there, because the next batter is Corey Seager, and take a look at the trouble here. Anderson trying to throw a curve in the dirt. This one's going to get away.
And this is where it just keeps on going. Austin Barnes comes in to score to tie the game, and all you could do was look at Blake Snell and Kevin Cash in the dugout and go, why?
So they got the tying run, and now they get the go-ahead run as Mookie Betts. He's in the middle of absolutely everything for this team with his speed. Dodgers take a 2-1 lead. Cash thinking about what might have been. Meanwhile, still in the sixth, here's the story that will draw lots of attention after this game is finished. Justin Turner, you see him here, flying out. Figured no big deal. But in a moment, Jessica, we will see the shot of him in the dugout being informed he has tested positive for the coronavirus and being taken out of the game. How about this? Remarkable moment. Again, he's taken out of the game. There will be controversy to follow from that. Meanwhile, back on the field first. Bottom of eight, same score. And Jessica, once again, it is Mookie Betts leading off the eighth inning. Bam!
You've seen the speed. You saw him get it going for the offense with the huge double. And then, of course, to put an exclamation point on the lead, he would come up with this huge solo home run to showcase just an amazing go for the Dodgers.
A huge insurance run. They go up 3-1, and so all that's left is for Julio Urias to close the door, and that he does. The Dodgers have won for the first time since 1988. The Los Angeles Dodgers are champions of the baseball world. 3-1 the final, 4-2 the final. The celebration is on. Blake Snell can only think about what might have been, and how about the moment of relief and exultation for Clayton Kershaw, who's waited so long, and Mookie Betts, who was so good. Corey Seager is the World Series MVP, but of course there's controversy. Justin Turner, again, tested positive, back on the field after, maskless, with his teammates, with his wife, in the celebration. So much to talk about it. Let's hear from them.
No, I mean, definitely disappointed, upset. You know, I don't know, I just want the ball. I felt good. I did everything I could to, you know, prove my case to stay out there. That was one of my better games I've pitched in a long time, honestly.
The only motive was that the lineup the Dodgers features as potent as any team in the league. Personally, I felt Blake had done his job and then some. Blake gave us every opportunity to win. He was outstanding. They're not easy decisions. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
Well, the reaction from all over the world of sports last night when Snell comes out of the game. Patrick Mahomes, you see it there, crazy, gave up only a second hit and got pulled. Noah Syndergaard, so who gets to pull the manager? So he's making no secret of what he thought. A-Rod had his thoughts as well. Computers running the game, not humans. Binders lead to blinders. Manage with blinders on, you miss what's actually happening in real time. So there's the controversy on the field. There's the controversy off the field. Let me bring Jeff Passan into the conversation as well. Jeff. Let's get to first things first. Jessica, you are a Los Angelino for your entire life. Let's just start quickly with this moment. What the Dodgers are World Series champs for the first time in two generations. What does that mean?
It means, I think about Clayton Kershaw. I mean, there's so many storylines, so many things, but that's the thing that stands out the most to me. The look of relief that he had before he celebrated, before the joy. We've talked about this here on this show, the narrative. It doesn't matter how good his starts were in the World Series. If they did not win it all, he can't put that behind him of what the postseason has meant to him, what he has meant with his career, all the numbers, all the greatness. Now we know Clayton Kershaw has done it all. My heart went out for him in finally getting that championship.
Jeff, to you, what's the biggest on-the-field story out of last night with the Dodgers finding a way to finally win a World Series championship?
Greeny, Clayton Kershaw certainly is the right answer, but the fact that Mookie Betts came into Los Angeles as the missing piece and comes out after his first year as a world champion again, after signing that 12-year, $365 million extension. You know, Dave Roberts, their manager, said earlier this week, if we had Mookie Betts back in 2018 when we were playing the Red Sox, we would have beaten them then. Well, they've got Mookie Betts now, and they've got their first championship in 32 years.
Okay, so the Dodgers get their due. No one's taking that away. But then the two huge controversial stories. Jessica, the decision by Kevin Cash to pull Blake Snell when he did. The analytics tell you it's the right move. Why wasn't it in your mind?
Well, I mean, the analytics are what got Tampa Bay to this point, and the numbers did show do not face this lineup a third time through. But Greeny, I mean, even live, not hindsight, in this moment, I was like, do not take him out of this game. Why? Because Mookie Betts at the top of this order, the way that these hitters were missing the ball, we're talking by this much against the fastball, the slider, the curveball, he had it all going. That's the feel component of this game that I love so much. And I love the numbers too, but you have to be able to trust your eyes and recognize greatness, and Blake Snell was that last night.
Now, Jeff, we see all the tweets that I put up there a few moments ago. The eye test certainly tells you, will there be people out there defending it today? Will people be telling us that Kevin Cash did the right thing last night?
The interesting thing about this, Greeny, is if you look at what the Tampa Bay Rays do, they do what was taught to them by Andrew Friedman, who happens to be running the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. Remember, he was the general manager for the Tampa Bay Rays before he went to the Dodgers, and all the ideas that they use in Tampa Bay, he brought along with him out to Los Angeles. Now, the difference, of course, is that he's got about four times the payroll that the Rays do. And, you know, when you have players like Mookie Betts and like Corey Seager and like Max Muncy and like Clayton Kershaw and Walker Buehler and Justin Turner, and I can go on and on and on, it's a whole lot easier to play the typical sort of old-fashioned brand of baseball. But if you go and look at what Dave Roberts did, a day before, he went out there and took Clayton Kershaw off the mound after 5 2/3 innings in an inning in which he had gotten two outs on two pitches. He got booed on the way back in, but the fact is that was the right move at the right time. Clayton Kershaw has gotten hit up in later innings, and Kevin Cash was concerned the same thing was going to happen to Blake Snell. I think the difference is Snell had been utterly dominant at that point, and it's hard to take him out then.
Okay, and then that brings us to the other storyline, and I have a tweet from Justin Turner after this. Again, he was pulled from the game because he had tested positive. He went back on the field afterwards to celebrate with his teammates, take his mask off as he did so. He tweeted, thanks to everyone reaching out. I feel great, no symptoms at all, just experienced every emotion you can possibly imagine. Can't believe I couldn't be out there to celebrate with my guys. So proud of this team and unbelievably happy for the city of L.A. Hashtag World Series champs. Jeff, I saw that you worked on a long piece with an explanation of how this happened. It was sent to me, but I haven't had a chance to read all of it. So for everyone who was, I'm sure, wondering, how did he wind up back on that field last night?
Greeny, it's actually very simple. He walked back out there, and nobody stopped him, and nobody was going to get in the way of him. And, you know, you listen to his Dodgers teammates. Mookie Betts said, essentially, there's no way that they were not going to have him out here with us. Justin Turner is the heartbeat of this Dodgers team. He's been around since 2014. He's been through the highs, he's been through the lows, and he has spent so much time working toward this moment. He was not going to be denied posing with the World Series trophy, and yet the optics of the whole thing, frankly, are terrible. And I think that everybody involved recognized that. I just think that they thought, in the end, as bad as the optics are, having him out there was worth it.
And so, Jessica, we were talking right before we came on the air. Imagine that circumstance if the Rays win the game last night. What would we be talking about this morning?
That we're not going to have a Game 7 right now. I mean, this game would get postponed, and you got to think about the repercussions of how many more positive tests are going to come because of this. And even though the optics looked bad last night, the season is over, everyone goes home. But imagine that this needed to have another game, that this Dodgers team needed to get back out on the field, and how much this storyline would continue. Of course, how the season started, the fact that this would be at the end, and if the Rays had won that game, that Game 7 being postponed, having so much controversy because of Justin Turner's positive test and the repercussions of him coming back out on the field.
All right, Jeff, give me a 30-second narrative ribbon on what we've just all lived through from the baseball season that we talked about every single day that may not happen in July all the way through to last night. How do we sum it up?
Greeny, I like to think of sports as really a mirror of society. And the fact that we started this season in the pandemic and that it was shut down and we didn't know that it was going to play baseball at all, and the fact that we're ending the season talking about somebody testing positive for COVID-19, I think is a perfect bow on all of it. And there's going to be a lot of discussion over the next week, 2 weeks, month, 2 months, who knows how long, about how the Dodgers acted here and about Justin Turner's decision. But the fact is, they made that choice. They are going to live with it. And ultimately, they're the world champions.
Guys, outstanding work, sincerely. We'll bring you back a little bit later in this program, but what a perfect way to start it and to finish the baseball season all at the same time. Stay close. Meanwhile, to our top story from the National Football League on Get Up this morning, the Dallas Cowboys made a deal yesterday. They're not bringing people in, they're sending them away. They traded Everson Griffin to the Lions for a conditional draft pick. Meanwhile, on the radio yesterday, Jerry Jones getting testy when asked if he thought his team has a void of leadership.
But seriously, where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is no. The answer is no.
There's not a
shut up and let me answer. No. When I go into the locker room, there's no leadership void in my eyes.
So everything is going against them, including the schedule. According to our analytics, the Cowboys are expected to lose all of their remaining games. Assuming that happened and they went 2-14, it would be their worst record since they were 1-15 in 1989. That was their first year with Jimmy Johnson. We all know he turned that into a great team. Ultimately, my football crew is ready to go here. RC and Nico with us this morning, and Dan Graziano is here. Dan, let me quickly start with you. They make the trade yesterday. They don't bring people in. They send them away. Is that should we expect to see more of that between now and the deadline on Tuesday?
Yeah, but on that level, right? Guys that they have brought in recently don't necessarily fit on defense. A guy like Dontari Poe on the defensive line could be a candidate to be traded or even cut. So look for moves like that. I don't get the sense they're selling off major pieces. They really wouldn't be able to with the contracts some of their big guys have anyway. But, yeah, I think they're going to shake things up on defense because, quite honestly, they're getting up 35 points a game. Who can you not live without on a defense like that?
That's fair. And so the big blow-up of this team might come after the season. We don't expect it to be this week. Meanwhile, Ryan Clark, when you listen to Jerry Jones' comments on the radio yesterday, what thoughts go through your mind?
Like, how bad do the Dallas Cowboys have to be for someone this rich, this powerful, to be upset? I think this is the most upset the underlings have gotten the boss man since Billy Ray Valentine and Lewis Winthrop went at Randolph and Mortimer Duke. Like, this is big. This is serious. This is big. This is a guy, Jerry Jones, who felt like he built this team to contend. This team is built with people that he has handpicked. He's giving out $100 million contract, $90 million contracts to all of these people. And he's expecting to win. He's expecting to have leaders. And this thing has gone downhill, and it's gone downhill fast. And he sees no way of coming out of it. So when you walk into a locker room of your making, and you say, I don't see a leader by skill. I don't see a leader by experience. You know what you're saying? I messed it up. This is on me. You guys aren't good enough. And when you have to have that realization, that's why you act the way you do with people who are asking very valid questions. Jerry Jones made this bed. Now it's time to sleep in it.
Absolutely. That was Trading Places, by the way. I finally got a reference on a Wednesday on this show. Meanwhile, Dominique, let me come to you. What is the Dak in all of this? How does the Dak Prescott sort of figure into all of this?
I mean, you talk about a leadership void. When your quarterback is gone, you have a leadership void. When your quarterback is gone, you have a talent void. And I feel like this potential championship window that we thought the Cowboys had around when Dak was a rookie till now, it's closing, and it's closing in an ugly way, in part because they didn't pay Dak last year or pay Dak before this season started. Because now Dak, the one thing that we thought wasn't going to happen was he going to get injured, and somehow his value has gone up. The way these quarterbacks have played has made Dak even more and more valuable and given him more and more leverage, while the cap is also probably going down. So it's going to be hard to put together a viable product for the Cowboys going forward. So it goes back to what RC said. Jerry's realizing that Jerry messed up, and there's nothing they can do about it at this point.
Yep.
We will do much more football as this continues. Guys, stay with me. We'll be busy all day. And by the way, I have a poll question today, and we have a sponsor. My poll question is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. And the question very simply is this: which team most needs to make a deal before the deadline? The Bears, the Browns, the Eagles, the Patriots? You can go to my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny and cast your vote. That brings us to this: Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence got everybody talking yesterday as he left the door open verbally about his football future, despite previously saying he plans on heading to the NFL after this season. He is the presumptive number one pick in the draft. He says he hasn't ruled out coming back to Clemson. Listen.
We'll just have to see how things unfold. I think there's a lot of factors in that. But honestly, just really playing this year, putting everything I have into it, not really focusing on next year, whether, you know, I leave or stay or whatever. Obviously, I have the option to do either one. Kind of my mindset's been that I'm going to move on. But who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. No matter where I go, whether that's across the country, or that's close to home, or I stay another year, no matter what it is, you know, we'll work it out.
All right, now, just how good is he? Let me put these numbers up here, okay? Over his last 16 games, he's 15-1. He's thrown 45 touchdowns and 5 picks. In the NFL's history, those two you see on your screen, Brady that year and Rodgers that year, are the only ones to put up numbers that good over the course of a single season. Now, for the record, if you're watching the show a month ago, I told you this was going to happen. Dan Graziano, how seriously should one take this threat by Trevor Lawrence to go back to school?
Not very seriously. I think it would be shocking. And even he said there, his mindset has been to move on. So he's working off of that. But when you talk to NFL people about Trevor Lawrence, the first thing you hear is how great he is. He's a can't-miss prospect of all time. But the second thing you hear is you wonder if he would pull an Eli Manning, right? And if the number one pick, the team that had the number one pick was one he didn't want to go to, would he try to leverage his way out of that? Now, a lot of disclaimers. We did the same thing last year with Joe Burrow, and the Bengals turned out not to be true. These are people speculating on a young man's mind and, you know, not necessarily certain how it will shake out. But 6 months away from the draft, if you were starting to lay the groundwork for something like that, a little bit of a threat like this might not be the worst idea.
Okay, and listen, I will tell you, just say it again. A month ago, I told you this was going to happen. Let me bring Paul Feinbaum and David Pollack into this conversation. There they are. Gentlemen, good morning. Paul Feinbaum, Trevor Lawrence talking about going back to school. What's your reaction?
Trevor, we all love you. We think you're great. But put a sock in it already, okay? Did Rupert Murdoch put you on the payroll at the New York Post so you can sell newspapers? This is not happening. Graziano is 100% correct. Trevor is bored. He's bored with the ACC. He's bored with winning by 8 or 9 touchdowns a game. So he's having some fun. I mean, after all, he's in Clemson, South Carolina. What else is he supposed to do for entertainment?
David Pollack, what is your reaction to all of this?
I think it's funny. Before the season, he made it very clear. He was like, dude, I'm out of here after this year. This is my last year. I really want to put everything into it. But I just think it just shows you, when you get in the grind, you kind of lose, you don't want to answer questions about things outside. So I think this is a great way to calm the noise, not worry about, listen, I might go pro off this year. I don't know what I'm going to do. Stop asking me about my future and stop asking me if I want to play for the Jets, because no, I don't want to play for the Jets. Who the heck wants to play for the Jets?
Listen, I can't fight this. I mean, everyone is yelling at me like I should be upset about this. I was the one who told you a month ago it was going to happen. We have much more on this. Guys, thanks for getting up early here. Such a crazy day with all the insanity at the World Series. As you can see, we are loaded this morning. As we continue, the Dodgers win for the first time in 32 years. But the celebration was the biggest problem of the night. Our coverage continues. And for two decades, the entire NFL asked the question, is it Bill or is it Brady? Well, as of this morning, I can give you the answer, and I will as we continue. Get up on ESPN. We back on Get Up, and what a Big Ten game we have for you on Halloween. Justin Fields leading number 3 Ohio State into State College to take on Sean Clifford and Penn State. It's Saturday night, primetime on ABC and on the ESPN app. All right, Sneaky Hembo is waiting on Buster today. Robert Stanberry, only the third, will join us in a moment, try to answer this. Including the postseason, these Dodgers went 56-22. Second best record by winning percentage for a World Series champion ever. Which team has the record? Buster will take his shot at that as we continue, and we will talk more about this. Did analytics cost the Rays a championship? That answer and more as we get up with you on ESPN. And I love it. Not much. We got the trivia for you. You ready? Did someone give you the trivia?
No.
See, I told you. No one ever gives him a fighting chance. Someone read him the trivia question. I'm about to come back on. Give Buster the question. Let him think about it a minute.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is our next MLS match. The Portland Timbers looking to finish atop the West standings with 2 weeks left in the regular season, squaring off against the LA Galaxy. That's tonight, 10 Eastern, on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. If you were to travel back in time exactly 1 year, here is what you would find. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were 2-5. Their quarterback had 15 turnovers. The New England Patriots, meanwhile, were 7-0, and they were the defending Super Bowl champs. What a difference a year and Thomas Edward Brady can make. Here's where they are today. Brady is playing every bit as well as he ever has. 18 touchdowns, 4 picks. He has 17 touchdowns from a clean pocket this season. No one else has more than 12. No quarterback has thrown more touchdowns into tight windows than he has. And he has a higher passer rating when throwing to wide receivers than he did in 2007, which is the year he rewrote all the records with Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Plus, his team right now is the FPI favorite to win the NFC. His old team, the Patriots, are 2-4. Their quarterbacks have thrown 3 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. They've scored 12 points or fewer in 3 consecutive games. With Brady, they never did that in 2 straight. And they are 2.5 games out of the division lead. That is their largest deficit since 2000, which was the year before Tom Brady became their quarterback. So, does all of this mean it was more Brady than Bill all those years in Foxborough? Of course not. But if you were one who wanted to make that argument and all you needed were the numbers to back you up, Mr. Hembo and I simply say, you're welcome. Those are the numbers. Let me bring the crew in here to react. I'm looking for a smile. I'm looking for a laugh. I'm looking for a reaction. I got one in Dominique Foxworth shaking his head at me. What do you say, Nick?
I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch. I understand how you couch that last little statement and said, I'm not saying it, but if you wanted to say it, here are the numbers for you. But, I mean, it's not a fair situation. It's only been like 7 weeks of football, and Bill Belichick has come into the season with several starters opting out from coronavirus. Then his quarterback gets it, and we don't know how that's impacting him on his return. Then his best cornerback, possibly the best defensive player in the league, gets the coronavirus and has to sit out, and we're not sure how that's going to impact him coming back. Like, I think this is, it's very difficult to draw these conclusions. I think this team would be a lot better if it weren't for those circumstances. And I'm pretty sure Tom Brady wouldn't be having the success that he's having if his team was hit as aggressively by the virus in those situations as Bill Belichick was. So I think you're probably right. If you have to pick one, Belichick or a franchise quarterback, you're probably safer going with a franchise quarterback. But I'm not so sure that I'm ready to give all of their 20 years of dynasty over to give most of the credit to Brady because of 7 weeks of football so far this season.
RC, what do you say?
Listen, this is the question I ask you. Are the Miami Sharks a legendary football team because Tony D'Amato gives great pregame speeches or because Willie Beeman was his quarterback? I think it's about Willie Beeman. Listen, quarterback is just a more important position in football than head coach it is. I mean, I think when you look at what the quarterback can do, when you look at many of these great head coaches, they have certain teams that don't do as well because they don't have someone at that position. We can look at Kyle Shanahan, who I think is one of the great football minds. Until he got Jimmy Garoppolo, someone that could do some of the things that he wanted to at that position, he didn't win football games. Now you look at Tom Brady going over to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Obviously, he's assembled a better unit of people around him, but that team is playing so much better offensively. Even Andy Reid, who we always knew was a Hall of Fame caliber coach and had Donovan McNabb. He's had Alex Smith, who number one overall pick, number two overall pick, but he gets Patrick Mahomes and finally gets over the hump. I don't necessarily think it has to do with the two people we're talking about individually. And I agree with Dominique. We can't take 7 weeks and say that Tom Brady was more important to the New England Patriots dynasty than Bill Belichick is. But I think this does show us that a great player at the quarterback position beats a great head coach every day of the week.
Let me get Graziano in here. What's your reaction? You covered that team, the Patriots anyway, last week, and you've been around them a lot. What's your reaction to the numbers?
I think there's no way we're ever going to answer that question, right? This is like LeBron versus Jordan. It'll be debated forever. Who is more responsible for it, Belichick
or Brady? That question's answered, Dan. That's not,
certainly,
not the same.
Certainly.
Not the same.
There's no way to answer a question like that. Certainly, you can't do it with just a half a season worth of evidence, but What I thought here was Brady identified that the roster in New England was hollowed out and he needed to get somewhere better for the final chapter of his career, whereas Belichick is kind of stuck with it because he is the system in New England that Brady could bail out on. So I don't buy Dominique's theory that the difference between Tampa Bay's roster and New England's is that one was hit by the coronavirus and the other wasn't. I think on paper, Tampa Bay had better anyway. To say the Patriots have a lot of problems is kind of like saying Ryan's been watching a lot of movies during the quarantine. Let's hold this.
Anything can happen.
I have to get to some other stuff here, but I want to come back to this because there's a lot of this I think we haven't explored. So Nick Scala, my producer, let's come back to this. Meantime, I need to go to this. Robert Stanberry Olney III. You know him as Buster. Is going up against Hembo, and here we go. Buster Olney, including the postseason, the Dodgers went 56-22. By winning percentage, that's the second best record for a World Series champ. Buster, which team has the best?
Yeah, sure enough, Hembo is going to throw this at me in a morning in which I didn't get much sleep, and I'm having a hard time doing the math in my head. I'm going to say the 1939 Yankees.
Oh, it's a good guess. The 39 Yankees are always a good guess, but so are the 27 Yankees, and that's the answer. The 27 Yankees went 114-44. They were 110-44 in the regular season, and they sweep the World Series, and so it was them, not their counterparts of 12 years later. But that's not a bad guess. Buster, for those just waking up, let me show them what happened last night. Game 6, World Series, craziest night of the baseball year by far. Dodgers with a chance to clinch. Blake Snell dealing on the mound with a 1-0 lead in the first inning. He strikes out the side and looks dominant. Betts goes down. Seager goes down. Justin Turner goes down. Top of 6, he's still dealing. He's given up just one hit. And as we take it to the 6th inning here, again, Snell facing Austin Barnes. Again, he's given up just the one hit. 5 1/3 innings. 9 strikeouts. 73 pitches. That's his second hit allowed. And Kevin Cash says, I've seen enough. He goes to the bullpen. He gets Nick Anderson, who is allowed to run in 6 straight appearances. Anderson facing Corey Seager with 2 on and 1 out. That's in the dirt. A run will score. We're tied at 1. The frustration from Cash. Later in the at-bat, Seager going to ground one. And as always, Mookie Betts, speed making a huge difference. Scoring from 3rd on the play. Dodgers take a 2-1 lead. But that's part of the story, was the decision to pull Betts. The other huge part, a story that draws enormous amounts of attention. Still in the 6th inning, Justin Turner is going to fly to the track and left for his second out of the inning. You are then going to see him in the dugout reacting to being told that he has tested positive for the coronavirus and he is being pulled from the game immediately. So bookmark that one in your mind. He gets pulled. Game goes on. Mookie Betts to the plate. Mookie Betts had hit a home run. This is bottom of 9. Julio Urias striking out Willie Adames to end the ball game, and the Dodgers win the World Series for the first time since 1988, and the celebration is on. Snell can't believe it. Dodgers take it 4-2, and oh my goodness, how'd he get there? Justin Turner on the field celebrating with his teammates without a mask after the game, tweeting, quote, thanks to everyone reaching out, I feel great, no symptoms at all. Just experienced every emotion you can possibly imagine. Can't believe I couldn't be out there to celebrate with my guys. So proud of this team and unbelievably happy for the city of LA, hashtag World Series champs. So Buster, we don't want to talk about this, obviously, but it is the overwhelming story that everyone is talking about. How did this happen and what reaction have you been hearing since it did?
Well, you start with this. You know, baseball did a great job getting the finish line. Major League Baseball and the players working like crazy to get to this spot. But so often in history, baseball is emblematic of what's going on in the country. And last night was a great example of that. And now, because of what happened, it just raises questions. What did Major League Baseball know and when did they know it? Was Justin Turner pulled out of the game quickly enough? After he was pulled out of the game, was he quarantined? Was he told to stay away from teammates? After the game, how was it allowed that he was around his teammates? Why wasn't he wearing a mask? For baseball, it was an ugly look to the 2020 season.
Yeah, it should remind everyone that if the Rays had won this game, then we wouldn't be playing Game 7 today. Because of this positive test, there would have been some delay, and who knows how long it would have been. And so quickly, what reaction have you been hearing? I know you are texting with basically everyone in the entire baseball world. What were people saying to you?
Well, first off, most of the response I was getting was about Blake Snell and that decision, and people were losing their minds when Blake Snell was taken out of the game last night with a feeling of, you know what, this has gone too far with analytics, and analytics are based on what's happened in the past, not what's happening in the moment. And Blake Snell last night was totally dominant. He faced 18 hitters. He struck out 9 of them. He got 16 swings and misses amongst 73 pitches. And look, you could see the reaction of the Dodger players in that moment after the game. They were thrilled that Blake Snell was taken out. I do think there's going to be a larger conversation in baseball this winter about whether or not the sport has gone too far with this and hurt the entertainment value of Major League Baseball.
Have you heard from anyone who said he did the right thing? Sometimes in blackjack, for example, I use this example all the time. In blackjack, you do the right thing and you wind up losing the hand. It happens all the time. Have you heard from anyone saying he did the right thing?
In front offices, yes, because if you look at Blake Snell's numbers after the first 50 pitches, he has gone downhill. If you look at Nick Anderson's season, he's been an excellent reliever. But that wasn't reflective of what was going on in front. And what I got back a lot of from folks last night was there was no feel for what was happening in Game 6 on a Tuesday night of the World Series. And it was all about past numbers. It was a battle of calculators as opposed to players on the field in that moment.
Yeah, the analogy of blackjack doesn't necessarily hold up unless you're able to actually count the cards. If you know what is in there, which in this case he does, he has a feel for how his pitcher looks, you can change the numbers if you want to. Let's finish it up with giving the Dodgers their due, and someone like Clayton Kershaw, who's waited his entire brilliant career for this night, what does this mean for him?
Well, for him, it puts aside the whole narrative about him being one of the greatest players of all time who couldn't win a World Series. Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, said it on the field last night. How about this for a narrative? World Series champion. And in that moment that the World Series ended, the Fox cameras were focused on Clayton, and you could see a glimpse of relief before he ran on the field and smiled.
I agree with you. There were celebrations of joy and celebrations of relief. His initial reaction was exactly that. Buster, you're the best. Thank you very much, my man. I'll see you a little bit later. Meanwhile, as we continue, the Patriots dynasty appears to be over. It was so bad this past weekend, RC was comparing New England to Wakanda. Wait till you hear this as he explains his tweets. Coming up, Get Up on ESPN. It's time for Ryan Clark to explain his tweets.
Get in the gym, bro. Well, I just got buffalo chicken dip. Baker.
Bruh. Lord. As everyone laughs at the way I read your tweet. I can't even do it with a straight face. It's a fan favorite. It's Ryan Clark explaining his tweets, and people seem to enjoy me reading them. And so let's go, because RC's got a lot to say this week.
She stopped talking to my ear.
I'm not quite sure that RC can hear me. Let's make sure whoever is in RC's ear gets out, and let's hear him explain these tweets. First one, watching the Pats play feels like watching Killmonger challenge T'Challa to be the Black Panther. You knew T'Challa wasn't going to win, but you were so used to seeing him do so. He always found a way. Yet Killmonger just kept beating him, asking, is this your king? Sad day. R.I.P. King. RC, explain that tweet.
Hey, man, listen, that was hard for me. Rest in peace to the King, Chadwick Boseman. But I just remember watching that, you know, T'Chaka and T'Challa, they're now separated. We've already beaten Baku as the New England Patriots did early on in the year. And here comes Killmonger, and he's taking us down. I mean, they killed Uncle James, I mean, Zuri. And now we're just watching it happen. And right in front of our eyes, the King is falling. And you say to yourself, you know what? I know he's going to get back up, and I know he can do it, but he can't. And then it's beat him down. And now they're picking the Pats up and they're putting them on the shoulders. And as they're walking to the side, we're seeing Cam Newton on the sideline. Jarrett Stidham is on the field and he's falling on his face. And then they throw him over the cliff. And now Angela Bassett got to run. Nakia got to come in and get him. And that is how I feel. Watching the King fall is killing me. And it is heart-wrenching. And all I can say is I hope they found a way to bring the Black Panther back.
All right, next one. Next tweet is about Scotty Miller. Here we go. Boys better start reading the scouting reports on Tampa Bay. Running out there on Scotty Miller with that Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, and Jules Edelman mindset. Bro is a flat-out burner, and corners keep squatting their feet, getting ran by. RC, I love this one. Explain that tweet.
Listen, Greeny, this is exactly why Sidney Dean and Billy Hole were able to beat Duck and King at the end of White Man Can't Jump. White Man Can't Jump. You know why? Because people don't read the scouting report. You run out there and you know all the cliches. Greeny, he's a lunch pail guy. He's the first one in, last one out. He's such a coach on the field. This guy has a feel for the zone. No, Scotty is a burner. He can flat out roll. Scotty Miller was 4-3-6 at the combine. This dude has 6 catches, 109 yards at 18 yards per clip. So all you DBs who are running out there thinking you're going to get possession routes, you better get on the scouting report and understand that this dude is going deep and Tom Brady is getting the ball to him. Do not be the dude that tries to bet that he can't dunk.
Next tweet from Ryan Clark involves the Chicago Bears. Here we go. Bruh, watching the Bears play offense is what I feel like sitting through This Is Us would be like. Ryan Clark, explain that tweet.
Greeny, every time I see the This Is Us promos, I get sad, bro. It feels heavy. It's stressful. But as I've been watching the latest promos, I'm kind of getting the premise of it, right? It's one family, they bring this kid home from school, and then the dude goes, he says, you know what? I thought the worst day of my life was when dad died, but the worst day was when they brought you in. This is how you have to feel if you're a Chicago Bears fan and you're a Mitchell Trubisky fan as well, right? You thought the worst day was when they benched Mitchell Trubisky. And then when you watch Nick Foles play against the Rams, you didn't realize the worst day was when they let Nick Foles be the quarterback. I mean, it was absolutely abysmal. Like, I couldn't even deal with watching it. I don't know what it must be like to be Robinson or Mooney or Miller or one of these guys who are wide open expecting the ball, but you see Nick Foles on his back trying to figure out a way to get it to you. And then when he does, the other team picks it off. And so if you play defense for the Bears, if you're a fan of the Bears, or if you are Matt Nagy, I am sorry that you have to deal with This Is Us every day of your life because it seems stressful.
That's another tour de force. I'm saving the last one for a little later because I got to get to something else here. But we have one more coming later in the program that I really want to hear. Meanwhile, this past weekend might have been the greatest performance of Baker Mayfield's career. 22 of 28, 297 yards, 5 touchdowns, beating the Bengals 37-34 in the same game in which they lose Odell Beckham for this season. And it's hard to argue that Mayfield would be better off without a superstar like Beckham, but the numbers say that he has been. His QBR is nearly perfect when targeting other wideouts on the team, and his completion percentage is up 25% when throwing away from Beckham this year. So let me bring my squad back in on this. And I will start with David Pollack, who's up early with us this morning. When you hear something like Baker Mayfield, the quarterback is better without the best receiver on his team and one of the best in football, what thought goes through your mind?
I think it's always frustrating to hear that because when you got a talent like OBJ, that should never happen. But it kind of worked out that way this past weekend. But I think it's more about managing Baker than it is about OBJ and knowing who they are. And when you start the game with 4 out of 5 drop back passes, you know, incompletions, hard passes, that's not what Baker Mayfield's going to succeed with. Baker Mayfield is one of the most rhythmic quarterbacks you'll find. You got to give him that easy stuff. You got to give him the run. When they got going in the second half, when in the second quarter, when he got rolling and he got his 21 straight completions, it was a rollout. It was play. It was run, run, run. It was a bubble. He got his rhythm. It can now be play action. It can now be timing. Because when he gets in a rhythm, when he gets in timing, he's really, really good. So, listen, you take away OBJ, I don't think the team becomes better. But if you coach better and protect Baker Mayfield and run the football and stick to that script, he will be better. So maybe without OBJ, they will do that more consistently, and you'll see a better, more consistent Baker Mayfield.
Nick, I'm thinking about this thing somewhat psychologically. What do you think when you hear this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of absurd, the idea that they get better when they have not as good players on the field. I think that I could understand that maybe Baker could feel the pressure of wanting to get the ball to Odell Beckham, and that could throw him off a bit, but I don't think the numbers necessarily support that. It's not that he's forcing the ball. If anything, I would love to see OBJ have more targets than he had, but to me, all that suggests is if your quarterback, if it is a psychological thing, then you got the wrong quarterback. If having somebody on your team that's really good makes your quarterback worse, then you got the wrong quarterback. I don't think that's the case, and I think that anyone who believes that the reason why Baker hasn't become the full Baker that we all expected him to be is because Odell Beckham is there. I think that's ridiculous.
What do you think, RC?
I think that this is hard for me because I got to go against two of my brothers and colleagues who I love very much, and Odell Beckham Jr., who is one of my favorite people and favorite players in the league. But Baker Mayfield is better without Odell Beckham Jr., and it's not an Odell Beckham Jr. problem. It's actually a Baker Mayfield problem. Baker Mayfield understands how to work the field a little bit better when Odell Beckham Jr. isn't there. Baker Mayfield seems to make the right decision on throwing to the open man when Odell Beckham Jr. isn't there. And the Cincinnati Bengals game was a direct example of that. He took the right throw at the right time. He got to the open guy and he made things happen in a less complex route situation than he normally does with Odell Beckham Jr. So is it true? Yes. Is it Odell Beckham Jr.'s fault though? No, it's not.
So that's right. I think that all those things can be true at the same time. I would ask you, Graziano, as my insider here, where is Odell now? Like he's going to be out for the rest of the season. He has a bunch of money guaranteed for injury. What does his future look like with the Browns, or might it be somewhere else?
Well, he doesn't turn 28 until next week. So, you know, he's got a future. And as you mentioned, he's got guaranteed money with Cleveland next year. So he will be in their plans. I mean, look, the Browns feel like they can operate their offense without him. But having him in there elevates their offense's potential, right? I mean, this is a team that's 5-2, lost by 30-plus points to the Ravens and Steelers. So they can win games without Odell Beckham, but is that going to allow them to compete with the very top teams in the AFC, in the NFL? I mean, look, you know, to borrow from Ryan, when Tony Stark and Captain America split up, they could get some stuff done, sure. I mean, they're good enough. But when Thanos shows up, they need to get back together or else they're not going to have any kind of chance.
All right, don't encourage this. I lose control every single week. Let's continue here in just a moment.
That's what I'm talking about.
Much more to do. Coming up for the second time in a month, L.A. is title town. How did the Dodgers do it, and why was this a bittersweet night all the way around? Answers on the way. Get up on ESPN.